And this is KPCW. You're listening to the local news hour. KPCW news time is 8:06. Let's find out what's in store for our weather this weekend. Here with a report, we have Cedric Haynes with the ABC4 Weather Center.
Happy Friday, KPCW listeners. It's time for a look at your Friday forecast for the Wasatch Back. We're going to be looking at partly cloudy skies as we move throughout the day. We'll see a chance of those isolated showers and storms developing this afternoon. Again, the best chance will be to our south today, but the chance is there for a few of those isolated storms to roll through parts of the Wasatch Back. High temperatures will be climbing into the upper 70s for us in Park City. We'll see those highs climbing into the low to mid 80s for the Heber Valley. Now, as we go into your Saturday, look for a much better chance of scattered showers and storms developing into the afternoon hours across the Wasatch Back. High temperatures will climb into the lower 70s for us in Park City. We'll see those highs climbing only in the upper 70s for us in the Heber Valley due to the chance of showers and thunderstorms in the area. As we go into your Sunday, look for partly cloudy skies. Temperatures will be in the mid-70s for highs in Park City with highs in the low 80s in the Heber Valley. We'll keep a chance of a few isolated showers and storms in the forecast to close out the weekend, but Saturday is looking like the opportunity for more wetter weather compared to Sunday, where it should be slightly drier. By the time we head into next week, we will dry things out once again across the area. Your Monday will feature mostly sunny to partly sunny skies. Temperatures will be in the mid-70s in Park City for highs. We'll see those highs climbing into the lower 80s for the Heber Valley. Tuesday will feature partly sunny skies across the area. Temperatures once again climbing into the mid-70s for us in Park City. We'll see those high temperatures climbing into the lower 80s in the Heber Valley. Heading into your Wednesday, you guessed it, more of the same. Partly sunny skies out there with temperatures in the mid-70s for highs in Park City. We'll see those highs climbing into the upper 70s to near 80 for the Heber Valley, and we'll stay with those similar conditions heading into your Thursday. So next Thursday looks mainly dry, partly cloudy skies, temperatures in the low to mid 70s for highs for Park City. We'll see those highs climbing into the mid to upper 70s for us in the Heber Valley. So basically, we've got unsettled weather conditions heading into the weekend, drying out heading into next week. That's a good July's forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Kane.
Coming up, I'm going to be speaking with Karen Marriott and Danny Glasser about the upcoming Day of Service. Then Park City Councilmember Ed Parisian will stop by with an update on last night's City Council meeting. We're going to finish our hour by speaking with local filmmaker Jackie Nico. State transportation officials have finalized a plan they say will improve Kimball Junction's traffic flow. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports how UDOT's road changes will affect area development.
Utah Department of Transportation made official what it had decided in March. The plan to improve Kimball Junction is a series of additional travel lanes and turn lanes around the intersection of State Route 224 and Interstate 80. It's estimated to cost roughly $48.5 million. Now that UDOT has cemented its plans, development may soon begin in Kimball Junction. UDOT's next step is to set aside money for the project by placing it on its six-year to-do list called the Statewide Transportation Improvement Program, or STIP. Under a development agreement between Summit County and Dakota Pacific Real Estate, the development group may build its first 170 workforce housing units once Kimball Junction makes UDOT's list. The Salt Lake City developer has about 50 undeveloped acres on the west side of the junction around the Skull Candy building. It's been the site of controversy, with residents fighting to block the project with a referendum earlier this year, in part because of traffic concerns. Also, High Valley Transit recently broke ground on its bus rapid transit project for the 224 corridor. The $119 million project is expected to bring dedicated bus lanes and improved bus queuing at traffic lights between Kimball Junction and Park City proper by 2028. Dakota Pacific's partnership with Summit County involves expanding the Kimball Junction Transit Center and Park and Ride, the start and end point for BRT. For more information on UDOT's plans for area roads, visit kpcw.org. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Serve Park City's second annual 9/11 Remembrance Day and National Day of Service is coming up on September 13th. Here to tell us about it and undoubtedly try to talk you into participating, we have Karen Marriott and Danny Glasser. Good morning and thanks for being here.
Good morning.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, Karen, let me start with you. Can you share a bit about the history and purpose of the Day of Service and Remembrance?
Well, it was declared a National Day of Service and Remembrance several years ago, It is spread out, like Heber's been doing a 9/11 National Day of Service and Remembrance for several years. I learned about the opportunity last spring, and I thought, oh, we could do that in our community. So I rallied Danny Glasser and a committee of 16 people to help organize it last year, and we had a successful day. I just feel like it was sort of surprising to me that our community didn't have a day of service, so this is a great thing to rally around.
So this is like a pure grassroots thing. I mean, you basically got 16 people together. It's kind of like Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland decided to put on a show, essentially, right? Essentially to put on a day of service. So let's talk about what's going to happen. Let's talk about what happened last year. How many people participated and how many projects?
We had just over 900 people and right around 30 projects. There were a couple. The city did a McPullen barn painting, which was wonderful. We serviced a number of the not-for-profits had specific needs where they just needed bodies to get out there. And they don't necessarily have the bandwidth to do it. So it was a great opportunity for that. And to Karen's credit, this is really about bringing the community together toward the good of the community.
Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking about the logistics of organizing just the intake process of how do you decide what you're going to do, and then how do you decide how to get it done, and then how do you get the people to follow this stuff? Is this like painting the Golden Gate Bridge? You start working on next year's like a week after?
Actually, we start working on it in the spring. We do kind of have a recap with our committee meeting, and then we're all ready for a break. But I think, you know, we utilize a free app called Just Serve, and it's internationally used, and we kind of realizing that was at our disposal. We're not a nonprofit. We don't have our own website. So we utilize this justserve.org, and it's actually a great tool for us to be able to use all year long for different nonprofits if they want to direct. There's not one calendar of all the volunteer opportunities in Park City. This is hosted by Park City Humanitarians, which is a group we started last spring. And the goal is to centralize all the volunteer opportunities. And so justserve.org/serveparkcity is where you find all the service projects throughout the year, but also specifically for this day of service. And anyone that's tied to the day of service will have our barn with a flag logo on it next to the nonprofit. But we have 28 different nonprofits that are putting on projects. I mean, we're hosting it, but all these organizations are actually organizing the projects along with several other community organizations like Deer Valley. They're not a nonprofit, but they're hosting a tree planting for 50 people up at there. And you know, the Blair Education Center is hosting 5 different projects there. Park City Library has a few projects there. But we have a wide variety that goes from the top of Deer Valley, like down to POO, where Fetch Cares is doing some of their projects. So you sign up for them all on justserve.org/serveparkcity.
I doubt you can sign up for them all, but
well, you can sign up
Roger,
for one.
You're
of
pretty
your
impressive.
Favorites.
I bet you can do a ton.
I picked that right up. So, do you have more projects this year than last year?
We increased. So the success of last year is driven sort of in the process of phasing. The first phase is to see who wants to do projects. And last year, the word of mouth for the non-for-profits was really positive. So those folks signed up early. And that was probably an easier process for us, is to bump up the number of projects around town. The process now is trying to get over the 1,000-person marker, which we really want to do. So last year was 900. We want to get 1,000 people out, and we're working toward that. And it's always a big push toward the end.
And if we had the big board in front of us and could see the numbers creeping up, about where are you now in terms of people who've already signed up?
We're pushing up at like 60 to 70% of our target, but that was similar to last year, where it's the last week, 10 days, where you start seeing people focus of, oh, our kids are back in school. Let's do something with the kids.
Okay.
Let's get out there.
So let's entice people to hear about projects that sound good to them.
Sure.
Let's do a few examples. Karen, what are some of your favorites? And what are some of the, let's start with some of the ones that are new, different than last year.
We have, the Utah State Parks joined in this year, and they have a Jordanelle day use area called Ross Creek. And so they are participating. The libraries are participating. Park City and Summit County Library are looking for people to organize shelves, and at the Park City Library help get out. The parks help do some of the yard cleanup. The Park City Ed Foundation joined this year, and they sponsor Bright Futures, which and they have a letter writing to students that are the first of their generation that are going off to college, and they have kind of a letter writing project. So those are some of the new ones, and we're just, you know, Wasatch Wildlife is participating this year. They sold out immediately. They used to be the Hummingbird Society.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And now they work with raptors. But there's all kinds of...
And my favorites, I love the Poison Creek cleanup. That's a city-sponsored one. But it also has firefighters who are volunteering as well as running the chipper. So I love when you can be side-by-side with the people who are first responders. So that's a favorite of mine.
And that sort of, and we'll come back to this, that sort of ties into why have a day of remembrance. And sort of, you know, let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, you know, I think all three of us are old enough to remember where we were on 9/11. But why do you think it's important to sort of use a day of service to commemorate that?
You want to take this?
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things we want to invite. Every volunteer is invited to the city park for a breakfast and then a kind of a moment of remembrance. Last year, we had bagpipes and we had a Cohen Nelson who played taps. We had a last call from the police department, and we're having many of those elements again this year. But, you know, a lot of the volunteers, and we have lots of high school participants, they weren't born. And so, you know, for them to know about that and the kind of community involvement, our logo is a picture of the white barn with a flag and the yellow leaves. And I was living in town then, and my husband was actually, Nathan Rafferty, was in New York City attending meetings, and I was talking to him on the phone when he watched that second tower fall, and it was also the day that I found out I was pregnant with my last child, and I kept thinking, what is this crazy world we're bringing in? And when I finally got up and got out of the house a couple days later to drive my kids to school, it was the first time the white barn ever had a flag hung from it, and Mike and Troy from the Park City Municipal had hung that hugest flag they could find up on the barn for the first time. And for me, that was a symbol of our community comes together through hard things, and together, you know, we work together to build our community. And that's the mission of Park City Humanitarians, is building community through service. And so reminding people about how communities came together during that time, even if you weren't in New York, it was a unifier for most of the world. So.
Yeah, and I would say the same thing. I sort of remember that day and how awful it was. But on the backside, I was in New York, the first day you could fly in, and I can't remember a time where the country felt more unified. I'm sure in different times with the Greatest Generation and things of that sort, but in my lifetime, that was a day where people came together, and it carried forward for a good long time.
It did.
And I think this event is intended to bring our community together in the same way, in reflection of that great, great sort of unifying moment.
And that's why that's why it's important to both of you, right? Which is
Absolutely. Try
to restore that. Let's talk a little bit about the ceremony. You're going to have you'll have a bagpipe, you'll have some music.
Danny's in charge of that. We're going to
learn. Yeah, so we've got music. Last year we had a wonderful sort of reflective speech by Sam Robeson from the fire department. This year we have another firefighter who's going to speak to that. We'll have music, we'll have breakfast foods donated by a number of organizations in town, which is lovely. It's just going to be a place to start off the day and set the tone for we're here together, working side by side as citizens to the benefit of our community.
And is there something at the end where people come back together? Although, from what you're saying, people are going to be scattered for, you know,
they will.
70
yeah.
miles. I mean, it sounds like...
Well, and it's from 9:30 to noon, the service projects.
Okay.
And so it wraps up. You know, it was really nice, and I want to mention some of the people that are kind of our sponsors in a sense, mm-hmm. because last year, you know, we were bootstrapping our breakfast, and we, you know, we're not asking for funds, mm-hmm. but we had people like Hilltop Hospitality, who runs Hearth and Hill. They are committing to bringing all the breakfast burritos, and the market is always such a great supportive of groups, and they're providing all the fruit and bagel den, the coffee, and then I just got a call this last week from Chasing Atlas Travel, Jill Merwin, who's been in this town for a long time, and she said, I want to provide snacks for all the volunteers. So, you know, and Domino's said, we want to provide pizza for 100 people at the city park after. So
there is something after.
So there is a little something
Yeah, and I think it all just brings out the best in us, and that's what you're saying here.
You know, we talk a lot about this being a town full of nonprofits, and we mm-hmm. look at Live PC, Give PC, and we see this giant movement for people to give money. But this is different.
This is
a unique event in the sense that you're not asking people to give money. You're asking people to give them themselves.
Absolutely. And we saw that last year where there were people who came to us and said, look, I don't have money to give. And we said, well, not a profit. It's not a nonprofit. We're looking for just people to lend their effort and their sweat equity to support the city. And that triggered a whole swell of people jumping in and saying, oh, I can do that. I can do that side by side with my friends and my neighbors and my family.
And do we see a lot of kids?
We do.
Yeah. Yeah, we do. It was interesting. One of the schools just called me yesterday and they have fifth and sixth graders. The homeroom parent was saying, what can we do with our fifth and sixth graders? So they're going to head over to the Blair Education Center where Stitching Hearts is putting on a weaving project.
Another soccer team reached out, and the coach and the manager said, we got 16 folk kids who'd love to participate. What can we do? And so we get those. Those are the calls that come in toward the end. They're like, hey, we got a team that the football team would like to do something, the lacrosse team would like to do something. And that's great because that's bodies jumping in and exposure for those young people to see what these organizations are doing, how they can contribute to the community, and not just through a check, but through helping out themselves.
Okay, so we're getting near the end. You got, what, 10 days left?
Big push.
Eight days left. So it's next Saturday?
Next Saturday.
Okay. So during the push, talk a little bit about the events that need the most bodies now. Let's try to entice people to sign up.
Oh, yes. I'm losing sleep over it. So I... we have that DNR project at the Jordanelle Day Use area. They are needing 30 volunteers.
Stop and again, remind us what that is. And DNR is the Department
State
of Natural Resources.
Yep. Yeah.
Not do not resuscitate.
You don't have to sign anything on that.
Okay, so it's the Utah State Park. What are they going to have to do?
And they are cleaning up that Day Use area. They're spreading some gravel. They're cleaning trails. They're weeding. So, I mean, what I actually do appreciate about these projects is you're doing real work. A lot of times you feel like you show up and you're doing something futzy. I mean, you're going to be putting your back into it. And there are projects, if you can't put your back into it because your back's out, you can, you know, go over to the library. Both libraries have projects that are stacking and organizing.
Who else needs boxes?
Christian Center.
Okay. Yep.
What are
sorting,
they need?
Warehouse sorting. So it's projects that typically need a lot of bodies to do,
right.
And you can do it side by side with people. So that's great.
So I'm warehouse sorting. What is that?
They're going through and they've got all sorts of donations. They just need help in sorting that stuff out.
Oh, you mean that stuff that everybody just drops off that ends up in a big giant room? So that does seem like a
and
major.
And it's great because you can blow out a lot of that work in one day for them.
Okay.
Which is great.
Well, and then the Summit Community Gardens, they are looking for 23 more volunteers to help clean out their gardens, mulch their beds. They have an orchard. They're looking for help with that. Mountain Trails, all of us enjoy and use their mountain trails. They need 23 more volunteers up at the top of Guardsmen, and that'll be a really cool anchor trees project is what it is. You meet right up there at that Bonanza Trailhead parking lot, and then they will take you to the job site. And that if you go to that, you'll miss out on the breakfast, but it'll be an awesome opportunity. 8:30 to 12.
Oh, and what do you do then?
They're calling it a day in the dirt. So they're I think you're going to come out pretty dirty, but I think it'll be really fun. Last year that was way oversubscribed, so I just want to make sure people know. Last year it was at Park City Mountain. This year it's up at the top of Guardsmen's.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else looking for volunteers? Anybody else got a big
the Poison Creek one, definitely. Yeah. I mean, that's clearing. We've got 1,000 yards of bramble and stuff, so we'll be clearing that, taking it over to wood chipper, and just beautifying, making it clear and functional.
I imagine there's some people out there saying, do I get to run the wood chipper?
But no, you do not get to run the city or
the fire department. But you can bring your big clippers. Like, all those reeds and everything create this erosion, so bring your big clippers.
Your shears.
And also the Christian Center, they're trying to deep clean their pantry, and so they still need 17 volunteers there as well.
The amount of traffic at that pantry is extraordinary.
It's awesome,
and it's a wonderful event, and I can see why every once in a while. I mean, I know you and I, Danny, you and I both volunteered at that pantry, and every once in a while, somebody's got to get in there and really clean out those fridges and
the kitchen. I mean, there are a lot of the organizations in town that they get by throughout the year maintaining, and this is an opportunity for them to purge some of those big projects that just take so many bodies.
Okay.
And Swanner Preserve, one last thing. Sure. That's also a fun one for kids because it's around the preserve, and they have their shorter projects from, like, I think they've got 9:30 to 11 or 10:30 to 12, and you can bring kids there and do a kind of a trash cleanup. You'll meet there. They'll give you a bag. You'll go out.
And that's one more thing. That's one more thing we should probably focus on. Other kid-friendly ones that you want to highlight.
Eyeglasses sorting for
Hope Alliance.
Hope Alliance.
Yep,
that's a good one.
Yeah, there's all sorts of projects over at the Blair Education Center, which would be great. There are some still spots at Fetch Cares. They're making a garden for
The Rainbow Bridge. Rainbow Bridge garden for when loved pets pass on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, which one are you going to sign up for?
The hook is in.
I will clearly sign up for one.
Fantastic.
And in order to figure out which one to sign up for, how would I go and look at the list?
You go to justserve.org/serveparkcity, And then you go down to where it says projects. You'll see a bunch of projects that are available throughout the year for all the different nonprofits. But look for the ones that say Serve Park City 2025 that have the barn. And you can just go down and scroll through and click. You can also join our newsletter that we send out, and it's a Google group for Park City Humanitarians, who's the host of this, by sending us an email to serveparkcity@gmail.com. And like this morning, I just sent out a list with direct links to all of the groups and how many are needed at each.
And if somebody has a question about what would be suitable for my kid or for my group, is there somebody they can email and get some advice?
They can email one of us, danglasser@gmail.com.
Dan Glasser. Period. Dot Glasser.
No dots.
Dan Glasser, all one word. Yep.
At gmail.com.
GLASSER@gmail.com. Yep.
Or just serveparkcity@gmail.com.
Okay. Karen Marriott and Danny Glasser, thanks so much for all you do.
Thank you, Roger.
Appreciate it.
And thanks
we
for
really
spending time with
it.
Us this
look
morning.
To...
Well, the Park City Council had a regular meeting last night. Here with a debrief is Council Member Ed Prisian. Good morning, Ed.
Morning, Roger.
How late did they keep you last night?
We get out like 9-ish, I think.
That's not too bad.
It wasn't too bad. It was supposed to be shorter, but... discussions ran a little longer, it was good.
And we're going to talk about what some of those discussions were that ran a little long. I think you started, or one of the early items on the agenda was about the child care scholarship program.
Right.
Do you view that as a success?
I think it has been. I mean, I should have brought the numbers, but we had like 117 children that were subsidizing, so it's a success. It's so hard to afford child care and have a job, and, you know, it's just difficult. So I think it is.
You know, I think everybody views that as one of the big three challenges of our town, right? It's somewhere
housing,
after traffic.
Traffic.
Yes, housing, traffic, and child care.
Everything's after traffic.
And they're all related.
Kind of, right?
You know, so, Ed, you know, when this was first proposed, there was some question as to whether it would be an ongoing program. Because I think it was the first year, there was $1 million dedicated.
Right. And we're still working through that.
Right. So we're still working through that first mill.
Yeah.
Are you looking at is council going to be presented with a question as to whether they need to, you know, put up some more money? I mean, obviously this thing can't run forever on that first mill.
Well, we did put up $300,000 more for this year's budget.
Okay.
So it was $1.3 million, and we had like we spent like $650 or so we had $350. So we got about $650,000 now to carry us through. And the question now is it going to be a permanent thing?
That's right. Really what, yeah.
So.
And what do you think?
Sure.
Okay.
It's a good thing, right? We've spent money on a lot worse things in this town.
And Ed, that's another conversation. But Ed, do you have a sense as to who's getting to use it, residents versus employees? Do you have a sense of what that breakdown is? I'm sure they talked about that last night.
Yeah, I mean, it's a combination. You know, Park City has a subsidy for their own employees, PCMC. It seems to be pretty widespread all through the demographics and through the income levels. We did talk about last night about if you get a raise and it kicks you off the final tier, then you just drop off the cliff and you don't get anything. So we're trying to figure out maybe...
That's an interesting challenge,
Gradually wean you off as you get more money. So, but not having children, I don't even know that world.
And now, at some point, I believe it was Kristen Schultz, at some point people were talking about, you know, a long-term solution that looks at getting more involvement by large employers. Is that something that the city's getting involved in? And do you think there's room for more participation?
We can't go it alone. If we do, it's going to be somewhat limited. So I think employer involvement would be a match kind of thing we talked about maybe. You know, but, you know, the problem is it's hard to stay, you know, here in town. Tourist economy, people aren't making tons of money. So employers, they can sometimes barely scrap through, you know, with their high rents and whatnot. So it's hard for them, too. Same thing with, you know, parking, having to pay for parking or transit help or, you know, carpooling. And it's complicated, Roger.
I think everything you deal with is complicated. If it were easy, it probably would never get to would never get to the council level.
Right.
So Ed, I know there was some discussion about the resident parking program, and I think you're an Old Town resident, aren't you?
Yep.
Yeah. So you understand this. Can you explain what are some of the problems that were being identified?
Well, a limited.
Well, first of all, how does it work?
On-street parking. So if you're a resident, mm-hmm. or if you own any property, you get these permits. You get up to like 5 permits for the you build, and then you deduct what you have for off-street parking. So if you have 4 spots, say like 2 garage spots, 2 driveway spots, then you have 4 spots already, so you can get one more permit for a guest or for another member of your household or who lives there. So, but you times that, times the houses, and you kind of don't have enough room to park. It's about on-street parking here.
So the math is such that if you multiply the number of houses times the number times the 5 less the spaces, there's more permits than there are spaces.
I would think so, right?
Okay, and so what are some of the problems that people have been identifying in the report? I mean, it sounds like people are having trouble actually using it, or do they think it's being abused? What's going on?
Well, there's not enough of it. So when you have these crowded little streets and you're trying to pick up trash and you're trying to plow the snow, and you know, some people just tend to like leave their extra car out there. You know, oh, I don't need it, and maybe use it once a week. And you know, all you have to do is move it like a foot and you qualify for moving it within the 72-hour limit. So some people will go back and forth, move it a foot every 3 days, move it back a foot and whatnot. So trying to just, complicated.
Well, again, I mean, I guess there's 2 questions I would have. One is, do you really need 4 or 5 spots per resident? That'd be one question. And, of course, the other thing that I'm thinking is, in some ways, we're working at cross purposes with ourselves. We really want people to use public transportation. So we don't want them to use their cars.
Right. But you have to use your car. That's the problem. You know, it's not like we live in the big city here where you can just take a bus 2 blocks and go to the supermarket. It's difficult to live in this town without a car. So I get that.
So is one of the concepts that you might require people to move like a block or, you know, actually move
the
car?
Yeah, we're thinking maybe another, but that doesn't really solve the problem necessarily.
I don't see what that would do. I mean,
one of the things is people that like King's Crown don't feel like they've gotten any parking, but they're kind of like outside the parking zone because you're on the other side of Lowell. And believe it or not, that's not considered the historic old town. That's part of the resort. So that the permits don't really...
When King's Crown was... The King's Crown development didn't include parking with the units?
It did.
Okay.
It did, but they got 1 or 2 spots, and some of them are like, I haven't been over there, I should go, and I hear the spots are really tiny.
Okay.
So if you have a pickup truck, forget it.
Okay.
It's not going to fit. So it's like the...
So where do we go from here? You had a report. Was there action items?
We're going to look into maybe 5 permits per house is too many, you know, kind of thing. Maybe the nightly rentals need a different type of setup. You know, I mean, we want to keep locals here, and we want to keep happy locals. And if you can't have a car, and then maybe you'll choose not to live in Old Town, then that's not a good thing. We want there's less and less of Old Town residents every time, right?
So if I have a nightly rental, I have these permits that I can give to the people who are renting my property.
Yeah, you got to get them for the nightly rental part.
Right.
There's like a different permit,
but it is available.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Okay. So, yeah. So I guess take it, that's something else that you're going to investigate whether that makes sense.
Kind of, right? I think you know, it's hard to get real hard numbers. And I asked last night, well, how many people are storing their car? They're like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. A bunch. It's like, all right, well, hard to make policy on that. But, you know, it's a constant issue here.
Okay, so this is something that's going to continue. Like so many other issues, this is one that's going to get pushed forward, and I assume that staff is going to try to come back with some alternatives.
Yeah, attorney's going
to
work on a few things. We gave him a little direction and set him loose. Figure it out, Johnny.
What did you spend the most time talking about last night?
Did you listen? Probably Clark Ranch, right? That's the answer you're looking for.
That's
the answer. That was a good discussion, I thought. It was a long time coming, just because we have a lot of residents out there that aren't psyched to have that frontage road in, and it's a little trickier, but I mean, we need the housing and it's a good project. But I think that discussion needs to be because we're kind of split on the council. You know, there's two that want it, two that don't, and I'm kind of stuck in the middle.
Yeah, I kind of see you as the swing vote on this one, Ed. Am I reading that right?
No, it's probably true, right.
I mean, it's pretty clear that both Jeremy and Bill Sirico don't want to put it on this side of 40. And Ryan. And Ryan and Tana do want to put it on what I, for lack of a better term, this side of 40. Right. I got that basically right. And now you've authorized that first road project. So yeah. what was the question in front of the council?
Well, the question was, and that wasn't what the discussion was about, was how, what's the AMI mix on this? How many fair market value for sale units, 34, and then the mix of the rest of the 167, I think it was, of rental units. What AMI is they going to go to? And it's always been one of those projects. You know, I think you talk to the housing staff, and there was every project meets up with this, you know.
So the discussion was about the mechanics. It's almost assuming it's going to be where it is. Right. These are the criteria. Right. These are the people. And those are always complicated discussions because I take it that the AMI issues and the workforce and that, you know, those kinds of issues affect your ability to get the financing.
Yeah,
right.
So exactly.
So you're playing a game with what do I have to do to get financing? Because right. You'd probably want, to the extent you want more, that might not be viable.
And different kinds of financing.
Right.
You know, the lower the AMIs, the more chances you have for the LIHTC. Mm-hmm. And then if you don't get that, there's so much funding. There's so many different funding sources. And the developers know these things, you know. What was I going to say? The LIHTC, we probably don't qualify because we're not low enough. So they got to have other financing. But
I take the developer thinks it's viable.
You know, they have to, right? I mean, they wouldn't do it if they can't make money.
Right.
You know, so with that, you know, then that evolved into Ryan asking me, why do you not maybe support it, which I do, but I want to get it right. Mm-hmm. You know, since there's five of us and two are against, I want to make, and I seem to be maybe the swing on this one, I got to make sure I get it right. So we talked about a traffic study that no one's seen yet. They haven't done it yet. And I was like, well, I can't decide if you don't tell me how many cars you think in here, you know, because that's the big issue, right?
And what's that going to look at? What's the traffic? What's the question you're asking the study to answer for you?
For me, mm-hmm. It's how many cars?
How many cars are going to go
right.
to the new Clark Ranch
right.
development?
And back every day.
Past Park City Heights.
Right.
Okay.
And not even just past Park City Heights, but there's a rotary down at the end there. They got to go out Richardson Flat Road, so it's about the whole street, mm-hmm. not necessarily about what's going to abut the Park City Heights. So
are we in this situation where the developer and staff are basically going forward with this thing, but it's not clear that it's actually going to get finally approved? I'm just trying to understand.
I know, right?
It's
complicated, right? This one's a tricky one because... You know, you've got a neighborhood there, and they don't, you know, call it what you will, but a lot of people don't want to have this thing next to them, and I get it. And so where I stand basically is give me some facts to make a proper decision here. I listen to all the people, every person that writes me an email or speaks in the public at the meetings, I listen to. And from this one, I hear both sides. Mm-hmm. So I got to listen to both, and I want to make the right decision here, and I think that traffic study is going to help me a long way.
And you had some input from Park City Heights residents, I take it, who are opposed. What do they say?
Well, they start out with, first, we love affordable housing, but not here. The usual, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I get it. You know, I get it. It's, I don't know if it's about the housing per se, but more about the traffic, you know. And if I don't have a study that tells me something, it's hard for me to, you know, make the decision I need to make. So we're going to get it. It's coming in like a month.
Okay, so you'll have this traffic study is the next issue for you. Then it'll come back in front of the council. And they don't, so we're at sort of, I don't want to say limbo's too strong, but it, in a sense, we're just waiting for that final decision to do a go. And
kind of.
Right. Have I got that right?
We're proceeding.
We are proceeding.
Right. We're doing what
incremental steps.
Right. It's going to planning, I think, next week.
Okay.
Or 2 weeks. Just initial. Just okay. Like, here's what we're thinking.
What it looks like. Yeah.
What are your issues? And they're probably going to say the same things. What's the traffic like? What, you know, what's the height? What's the density? So we're kind of vetting it before it gets to planning to vet.
Just before we go, let's touch on, I know there was some discussion about water rates. Can you, what's happening? Is there a concern that the water rates are too high or too low? What's going on?
Yeah. But basically, you know, we did the water rates.
Right.
We
That's
did
what
them.
I'm asking.
And the idea was that 90% of the people were going to get a reduction.
Right.
Which turned out to be true.
Okay.
But some of these, the penalties for overuse were exaggerated. So people had some bills triple, quadruple, and that wasn't the expected outcome. So
we're talking about doing some fine-tuning.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fine-tuned some tiers, and we reduced the penalty in half. So I think it seems like they've got that part covered. So it's going to cost us some money out of the water fund to subsidize this. So now we got to figure out where to get that extra $1 million.
So the council approved some amendments that are designed to sort of tweak it a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
So hopefully everybody will have a... You know,
more fair.
Not these crazy. And we're going to give credit to those people. I mean, it wasn't the intended outcome. So it's like, it's not on you. It's like, we'll make good on you and fix it.
All right. Ed, anything else you want to touch on before we go?
What else? Big meeting today at 11 about the Bonanza Village, the 5-acre site. So meeting number 2 is today. And we gave them a lot to chew on last meeting.
You did.
For sure. And there's no agenda item, so I don't know. I'm sure they're going to propose what...
You think you're going to get some more of a vision? I mean, obviously, those first drawings that got everybody so upset. are you going to get more of a vision of how they balance the need to use enough density for this to be financially viable,
right,
but also have it feel open and airy? And you think you're going to get some more sense of that? It's a real challenge.
It is a challenge. I've had this vision since 2017, Roger. I've been pushing this village thing... community center for, 8 years now? So in my mind, it's crystal clear what it needs. So now it's just a matter of getting the council along. And I think we're moving. I mean, we gave so many great ideas. And, yeah, I think it's going to be awesome. I still think we're going to get this thing. Just, you're going to want to go there and hang out.
Ed Parisian, so, thanks for spending time with us this morning.
Thanks, Raj. Good to see you.
Well, a Park City local has made a new film set, at least in part, in Australia, The Ballad of the Bush Mare. Here to tell us about it is filmmaker Jackie Nico. Good morning, Jackie.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
So, Jackie, tell us a little about your background. How, you know, I understand you're a Park City local, and how did you sort of end up making movies?
Yeah, so I grew up in Chicago, Illinois. I trained at the Second City Acting and at Joe Hall and Hubbard Street Dance. I worked in theater and commercial. And I've always been passionate about storytelling that can disrupt expectations and centers around voices that we don't hear.
Wait, when you tell me you trained at Second City, I'm highly tempted to say, okay, let's do a little improv. But...
Right. Well, here we are. I think that's what we're about to do here.
Okay. So you've always been into storytelling.
Yeah.
Have you made, I mean, then how has that moved into the actual making of films? Is this your first film or have you made some other films?
No, I've made a bunch of films. This is definitely the largest thing that I've ever produced. I got partnered with the creator of this and co-producer, Aisha Zakia Rose, and she's an Australian filmmaker, writer, actress. And so we decided to collaborate between Australia and here and make two worlds come together.
How did the two of you, how did this happen?
Yeah.
Is this going to be a cute meet story?
It kind of was. We have a mutual friend in Los Angeles. and he felt really, really strongly about us meeting. And I was like, why? And he's like, I have a feeling. And when we met up, she was visiting Park City. She was looking around for this pilot. And she's like, the land here really represents the land in Northern Australia. And she looked at me and she showed me this incredible pitch deck of this story. And I was like, yes, that I can do it. And she's like, really, I was in Kevin Costner's Horizon last year, acting in it. And I had made a lot of wonderful connections and friends through that. And I knew that I could help her produce it.
Okay, so she, so the two of you are co-producers. Give me the masthead.
Yeah. So we are. She is the creator and writer of The Ballad of the Bushmare. She came to me and showed me the storyline, and so I came on to help creatively produce it and bring everybody together here for it. And then we are both acting in it. She stars in it, so we did the whole thing.
And you're both directing it.
I'm co-directing it with somebody else. Yeah.
So, boy, the titles are going to just have your name on it many, many times.
For this one, yes.
Okay, so The Ballad of the Bushmare.
Yeah.
What's a bushmare and what's the movie about?
A bushmare is an Australian cowgirl or cowboy. And the story is about a young girl and her mother who are coming over from Afghanistan to Thursday Island in the 1800s, Thursday Island, Australia. And while they're on the ship, they unfortunately get separated by a British colonial man. And the pilot cuts to 20 years later. The young girl, Maiwa, has had to raise herself out in the bushland for 20 years by herself. And so we now follow her journey of resilience and how she has had to make this work for herself.
Okay, so was the film shot here in Park City, in Australia, or both?
A little bit of both. Mm-hmm. We did a couple days in Australia, the scenes with the ship coming over. We don't have an ocean here, so.
I don't think the Jordanelle would pass, no.
No, I thought about it, but I was like, I don't think this ship's gonna fit on the Jordanelle. And then everything else was shot here. We actually shot for 3 days in and around Summit County, which I was really excited to do. And then we shot in Alberta and at a studio down in Salt Lake as well.
How many days was the shoot?
Total, it ended up being about 10.
Well, that's not bad. And for how long is the film?
It's I watched a draft last night. It's running about an hour and 15 minutes.
That's pretty impressive. I mean, that's not many shooting days for an hour and 15 minutes.
No, they were very, very long days.
I was going to say. So, you know, playing all these roles, that must have been pretty exhausting. Have you ever done anything like that before? I mean,
on a micro scale, yes, for short films, but nothing to this degree.
And so the film proceeds. We're following her after she is she coming back to civilization. Give us a little more plot.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's this beautiful genre. It's a Western, yes, but it kind of just defies the strict categorization of that. It's more of like this very poetic. There's a lot of poetry involved in it. So there's a voice over it that follows her through the bushland, and then she comes across a lot of adversity. I don't want to give it away. She comes across adversity with the people that she meets along the way from her past. Mm-hmm. And it kind of just defies the odds of, I think, especially like how we see and saw women of that time. And we completely broke the mold on that. And we put this very modern twist to this historic time that would have been women were going to be this certain way. Mm-hmm. And Maiwa breaks all of that. And so she tells the hero's journey in a very unique way.
So at the end of the day, it is, I mean, there are only so many plots, right?
Right.
So yeah. It is a hero's journey
it
story.
It is. And it is based on a true story.
Was there actually a person that you were basing this on?
It's the creator, Aisha. It is based on a lot of her family history, which is pretty amazing.
So this person is, as we say, essentially a cowgirl, right?
Yeah.
For lack of
a
better term.
Yes.
I don't know what the proper term is.
Bushmare.
And I suppose we should say Bushmare.
Bushmare, yeah. I'm still trying to get it down.
that's pretty good. So she's lived this independent life. Does she end up, as part of this, a lot of these kinds of hero stories take people into a more sort of urban or more developed scenario. Is that part of what happens here?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because she really leads this. So she brings the characters actually with her more into the land. Mm-hmm. They don't.
It's the other way.
They don't. Okay. Yeah, it's the other way around.
Got it.
They don't bring her into their colonies. She ends up bringing them into her world.
And at an hour and 15 minutes, is that what you is that an okay time frame for what you're trying to accomplish? Do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I you know, a lot of drama miniseries or however this all pans out, you need that length of time to really tell the story of what's happening.
And what are your ambitions for distribution?
Well, we are how many days away? A few days away from applying to Sundance for their pilot segment.
By the way, is that what you would view it as, a pilot for a television series?
It is. Okay. It's the first episode
of a series.
Of a series, yes.
So our central character would be the sort of hero.
Yeah, absolutely. The whole thing is around Maiwa, mm-hmm. Maiwa Khan, this mm-hmm. an incredible Bushmare. And I have different plans for distribution of who I think would be a really, really great fit for us. We're open, we're seeking, we're ready. We're ready for it to get picked up.
And is it ready? I mean, you said you had a draft. Is the music in there? Are all the sort of post-production tasks and more or less done? Well, they must be if you're going to get it to Sundance. They got to be in pretty good shape.
Yeah, actually, it was really exciting timing. I'm really tired this morning because I was up all night. We got our final picture lock last night, mm-hmm. like at midnight. So,
now do you do any of the technical post-production stuff yourself?
I've worked alongside. I need somebody alongside me to help me with the technicals. But yes, even auditions now, we have to edit all of our own stuff with filming it. So,
and how did you finance it?
Oh, this has been a very collaborative effort. There has been definitely sweat equity from Aisha and I involved in this one. Mostly that. We did run an Indiegogo, which is a creative platform that helps you raise money. But we just knew that we didn't want to wait. And we knew that if we kept waiting on funding, that it wasn't going to happen in the time frame that we were seeking. So
you did some self-funding. You got people to help. Did you get some volunteers to sort of help you as well?
We did. I did a lot of creative producing for this one, and I'm so grateful. I owe big, big thanks to many, many people for this.
So, Jackie, I doubt you have a website for people to learn more about the film.
Not yet. We did just start an Instagram page. You can find us at The Ballad of the Bushmare on Instagram. Jackie Nico and Aisha Rose, where I can.
How do you spell her name?
A Y E S H A H.
Rose.
Rose.
Okay, Jackie Nico, producer and director. Let's see, what are all your titles? Co-producer, co-director, actress.
Yes.
Chief cook, bottle washer.
Whatever you need.
Of The Ballad of the Bushmare.
Yes.
Well, good luck with Sundance.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for spending time with us. Park City Singers is looking to recruit more members ahead of its winter concert. KPCW's Christine Weller reports the choral group has a new artistic director at the helm.
Park City Singers is a non-audition community choir dedicated to bringing choral music to Summit County. The nonprofit starts rehearsals next week for its annual holiday concert in December. New artistic director Darla Cardwell says the group wants to add more voices to the choir.
We would love to be at least 50 strong. We are looking for high school students and college kids and young adults who might want to come back to their musical roots and have an experience of singing in community.
Cardwell was a professional soloist, educator, and director, and has a musical theater background. She previously did a national tour of Cats. The group also has a new pianist, Yifeng Go, who is an accomplished and collaborative artist with experience performing and coaching instrumentalists and singers. The holiday concert is called Songs of Light and Wonder. It will feature timeless works and festive favorites.
We have some more challenging pieces with some beautiful, rich harmonies built into the different parts, but we are definitely balancing that with accessible music.
Cardwell also wants to expand Park City Singers' reach by bringing back spring concerts. President Mary Guches has been in the choir for 17 years and said the group previously hosted spring concerts featuring Broadway tunes.
With Darla starting with us as our new artistic director and our board of directors, we're very seriously considering a spring season, and we're very excited about that.
Singers pay $55 to participate each season. That includes rehearsals on Tuesdays from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m., the December concert, and working with professional musicians. Christine Weller, KPCW News.